Chapter 49. Miss Alden gave signs of profound distress. Her voice faltered. "You don't know how bad it has come to be." She expects now to see him. The veil dropped from her fingers, and she clasped her hands in anguish. "He shall end by her seeing him," she cried. Razumov raised his head sharply, and attached on her a prolonged, thoughtful glance. "H'm. That's very possible," he muttered in a peculiar tone, as if giving his opinion on a matter of fact. "Wonder what?" Dottie checked himself. "That would be the end. Her mind shall be gone then, and her spirit will follow." Miss Alden unclasped her hands, and let them fall by her side. "You think so?" he queried profoundly. Miss Alden's lips were slightly parted. Something unexpected and unfathomable in that young man's character had fascinated her from the first. "Oh, there's neither truth nor consolation to be got from the phantoms of the dead," he added after a weighty pause. "Might have told her something true, for instance, that your brother meant to save his life to escape. There can be no doubt of that. But I did not." "You did not? But why?" "I don't know. Other thoughts came into my head," he answered. He seemed to me to be watching himself inwardly, as though he were trying to count his own heartbeats, while his eyes never for a moment left the face of the girl. "You were not there," he continued. "Had made up my mind never to see you again." This seemed to take her breath away for a moment. "You? How is it possible?" you may well ask. However, I think that I refrained from telling your mother from prudence. I might have assured her that in the last conversation he held as a free man he mentioned you both. That last conversation was with you," she struck in her deep, moving voice. "Omday you must. It was with me. Of you he said that you had trustful eyes. And why I have not been able to forget that phrase I don't know. It meant that there is in you no guile, no deception, no falsehood, no suspicion, nothing in your heart that could give you a conception of a living, acting, speaking lie, if ever it came in your way. That you are a predestined victim. What a devilish suggestion." The convulsive, uncontrolled tone of the last words disclosed the precarious hold he had over himself. He was like a man defying his own dizziness in high places, and tottering suddenly on the very edge of the precipice. Miss Alden pressed her hand to her breast. The dropped black veil lay on the floor between them. Her movement steadied him. He looked intently on that hand till it descended slowly, and then raised again his eyes to her face. But he did not give her time to speak. "No? You don't understand?" "Very well." He had recovered his calm by a miracle of will. "Oh, you talked with Sofia Antonovna?" "Yes. Sofia Antonovna told me." Miss Alden stopped, wonder growing in her wide eyes. "H'm. That's the respectable enemy," he muttered, as though he were alone. "The tone of her references to you was extremely friendly," remarked Miss Alden, after waiting for a while. "Is that your impression? And she the most intelligent of the lot too. Things then are going as well as possible. Everything conspires to..." "These conspirators," he said slowly, with an accent of scorn, "they would get hold of you in no time. You know, Natalia Viktorovna, I have the greatest difficulty in saving myself from the superstition of an active providence. It's irresistible. The alternative, of course, would be the personal devil of our simple ancestors. But, if so, he has overdone it altogether. The old father of lies, our national patron, our domestic god, whom we take with us when we go abroad. He has overdone it. It seems that I am not simple enough. That's it. I ought to have known. And I did know it," he added in a tone of poignant distress which overcame my astonishment. "This man is deranged," I said to myself, very much frightened. The next moment he gave me a very special impression beyond the range of commonplace definitions. It was as though he had stabbed himself outside, and had come in there to show it. And more than that, as though he were turning the knife in the wound and watching the effect. That was the impression, rendered in physical terms. One could not defend oneself from a certain amount of pity. But it was for Miss Alden, already so tried in her deepest affections, that I felt a serious concern. Her attitude, her face, expressed compassion struggling with doubt on the verge of terror. What is it, Kirillo Sidorovich? There was a hint of tenderness in that cry. He only stared at her in that complete surrender of all his faculties which in a happy lover would have had the name of ecstasy. Why are you looking at me like this, Kirillo Sidorovich? I have approached you frankly. I need at this time to see clearly in myself. Dutchy ceased for a moment, as if to give him an opportunity, to utter at last some word worthy of her exalted trust in her brother's friend. His silence became impressive, like a sign of a momentous resolution. In the end Miss Alden went on, appealingly, I have waited for you anxiously. But now that you have been moved to come to us in your kindness, you alarm me. You speak obscurely. It seems as if you were keeping back something from me. Tell me, Natalia Viktorovna, he was heard at last in a strange unringing voice, whom did you see in that place? She was startled, and as if deceived in her expectations. Where? In Peter Ivanovich's rooms? There was Mr. Laspara and three other people. Ah! The vanguard, the forlorn hope of the great plot, he commented to himself. Ears of the spark, to start an explosion which is meant to change fundamentally the lives of so many millions in order that Peter Ivanovich should be the head of a state. You are teasing me, she said. Dear one told me once, to remember that men serve always something greater than themselves, the idea. Our dear one, he repeated slowly. The effort he made to appear unmoved absorbed all the force of his soul. He stood before her like a being with hardly a breath of life. His eyes, even as under great physical suffering, had lost all their fire. Your brother. But on your lips, in your voice, it sounds. And indeed in you everything is divine. I wish I could know the innermost depths of your thoughts, of your feelings. But why, Kirillo Sidorovich, she cried, alarmed by these words coming out of strangely lifeless lips. Have no fear. It is not to betray you. So you went there, and Sofia Antonovna, what did she tell you then? She said very little, really. She knew that I should hear everything from you. She had no time for more than a few words. Miss Alden's voice dropped, and she became silent for a moment. He man, it appears, has taken his life, she said sadly. Tell me, Natalia Viktorovna, he asked after a pause, do you believe in remorse? What a question. What can you know of it, he muttered thickly. He is not for such as you. What I meant to ask, was whether you believed in the efficacy of remorse? She hesitated as though she had not understood, then her face lighted up. Yes, she said firmly. So he is absolved. Moreover, that Zemianich was a brute, a drunken brute. A shudder passed through Natalia Alden. But a man of the people, Razumov went on, to whom they, the revolutionists, tell a tale of sublime hopes. Well, the people must be forgiven. And you must not believe all you've heard from that source either, he added, with a sort of sinister reluctance. You are concealing something from me, she exclaimed. Do you, Natalia Viktorovna, believe in the duty of revenge? Listen, Kirillo Sidorovich. I believe that the future shall be merciful to us all. Revolutionist and reactionary, victim and executioner, betrayer and betrayed, they shall all be pitied together when the light breaks on our black sky at last. Pitied and forgotten, for without that there can be no union and no love. I hear. No revenge for you, then? Never? Not the least bit? He smiled bitterly with his colorless lips. You yourself are like the very spirit of that merciful future. Strange that it does not make it easier. No. But suppose that the real betrayer of your brother Zamyanich had a part in it too, but insignificant and quite involuntary. Suppose that he was a young man, educated, an intellectual worker, thoughtful, a man your brother might have trusted lightly, perhaps, but still suppose. But there's a whole story there. And you know the story. But why, then, I have heard it. There is a staircase in it, and even phantoms. But that does not matter, if a man always serves something greater than himself, the idea. I wonder who is the greatest victim in that tale? In that tale, Miss Alden repeated. She seemed turned into stone. Do you know why I came to you? It is simply because there is no one anywhere in the whole great world I could go to. Do you understand what I say? Not one to go to. Do you conceive the desolation of the thought, no one to go to? Utterly misled by her own enthusiastic interpretation of two lines in the letter of a visionary, under the spell of her own dread of lonely days, in their overshadowed world of angry strife, she was unable to see the truth struggling on his lips. What she was conscious of was the obscure form of his suffering. She was on the point of extending her hand to him impulsively when he spoke again. An hour after I saw you first, I knew how it would be. The terrors of remorse, revenge, confession, anger, hate, fear, are like nothing to the atrocious temptation which you put in my way the day you appeared before me with your voice, with your face, in the garden of that accursed villa. She looked utterly bewildered for a moment. Then, with a sort of despairing insight, went straight to the point. The story, Kirillo Sidorovich, the story. There is no more to tell. He made a movement forward, and she actually put her hand on his shoulder to push him away, but her strength failed her, and he kept his ground, though trembling in every limb. He ends here on this very spot. He pressed a denunciatory finger to his breast with force, and became perfectly still. I ran forward, snatching up the chair, and was in time to catch hold of Miss Alden and lower her down. As she sank into it, she swung half round on my arm and remained averted from us both, drooping over the back. He looked at her with an appalling expressionless tranquility. Incredulity, struggling with astonishment, anger, and disgust, deprived me for a time of the power of speech. Then I turned on him, whispering from very rage, "This is monstrous. What are you staying for? Don't let her catch sight of you again. Go away." Dottie did not budge. "Aren't you understand that your presence is intolerable even to me? If there's any sense of shame in you." Slowly his sullen eyes moved in my direction. "How did this old man come here?" he muttered, astounded. Suddenly Miss Alden sprang up from the chair, made a few steps, and tottered. Forgetting my indignation, and even the man himself, I hurried to her assistance. I took her by the arm, and she let me lead her into the drawing room. Away from the lamp, in the deeper dusk of the distant end, the profile of Mrs. Alden, her hands, her whole figure at the stillness of a somber painting. Miss Alden stopped, and pointed mournfully at the tragic immobility of her mother, who seemed to watch a beloved head lying in her lap. That gesture had an unequaled force of expression, so far-reaching in its human distress that one could not believe that it pointed out merely the ruthless working of political institutions. After assisting Miss Alden to the sofa, I turned round to go back, and shut the door framed in the opening. In the searching glare of the white anteroom, my eyes fell on Razumov, still there, standing before the empty chair, as if rooted forever to the spot of his atrocious confession. A wonder came over me that the mysterious force which had torn it out of him had failed to destroy his life, to shatter his body. It was there unscathed. I stared at the broad line of his shoulders, his dark head, the amazing immobility of his limbs. At his feet the veil dropped by Miss Alden looked intensely black in the white crudity of the light. He was gazing at it spellbound. Next moment, stooping with an incredible, savage swiftness, he snatched it up, and pressed it to his face with both hands. Something, extreme astonishment perhaps, dimmed my eyes, so that he seemed to vanish before he moved. The slamming of the outer door restored my sight, and I went on contemplating the empty chair in the empty anteroom. The meaning of what I had seen reached my mind with a staggering shock. I seized Natalia Alden by the shoulder. "That miserable wretch has carried off your veil," I cried, in the scared, deadened voice of an awful discovery. "E. Dot," the rest remained unspoken. I stepped back and looked down at her, in silent horror. Her hands were lying lifelessly, palms upwards, on her lap. She raised her gray eyes slowly. Shadows seemed to come and go in them, as if the steady flame of her soul had been made to vacillate at last in the cross currents of poisoned air from the corrupted dark immensity claiming her for its own, where virtues themselves fester into crimes in the cynicism of oppression and revolt. It is impossible to be more unhappy. Dot, dot, the languid whisper of her voice struck me with dismay. T is impossible. Dot, dot, I feel my heart becoming like ice. IV, Razumov walked straight home on the wet glistening pavement. A heavy shower passed over him. Distant lightning played faintly against the fronts of the dumb houses with the shuttered shops all along the Rue de Kerouch. And now and then, after the faint flash, there was a faint, sleepy rumble. But the main forces of the thunderstorm remained massed down their own valley, as if loath to attack the respectable and passionless abode of democratic liberty, the serious-minded town of dreary hotels, tendering the same indifferent hospitality to tourists of all nations, and to international conspirators of every shade. The owner of the shop was making ready to close when Razumov entered, and without a word, extended his hand for the key of his room. On reaching it for him, from a shelf, the man was about to pass a small joke as to taking the air in a thunderstorm, but, after looking at the face of his lodger, he only observed, "Just to say something, you've got very wet." "Yes, I am washed clean," muttered Razumov, who was dripping from head to foot, and passed through the inner door towards the staircase leading to his room. He did not change his clothes, but, after lighting the candle, took off his watch and chain, laid them on the table, and sat down at once to write the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.